This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Two guests on the show today, 10:35, Eric Edholm from NFL.com will join us. And then at 12, former NFL general manager Mark Domenech will be our guest. This from Evan in Bethesda, Denton. I want you to listen to this too, because I don't know if you have the answer to this. Kevin, are you going to talk about the new format for the NBA All-Star game this weekend? The players essentially quit on the game last year, so the NBA went with a major attempt to fix it. And then Evan sent me the link to the fix because I was unfamiliar with it. Do you know what he's talking about, Denton? Do you know what the All-Star game is this weekend?
Yeah, we talked about it. It's a four-team tournament kind of deal.
See how excited I was when you presented the subject to me?
Yeah,
don't have any recollection of it.
Yeah.
I'm not lying to you either. When he sent me this link and I saw it, I was not familiar with it, or it did not ring a bell that we had talked about this. So I did go through the whole format, and it's really a joke in so many ways. But for those of you who didn't know, I didn't even realize that the NBA All-Star game was this weekend. I should have remembered that it was this weekend, because it typically is the week after the Super Bowl, right? Hasn't that been a general rule, either a week or 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, sometime in mid to late February?
Yeah, it's always in mid-February.
Yeah, I don't know if it's always been a week after the Super Bowl, but it seems like there's been many a year in which it was a week after the Super Bowl. But I had no idea until I read Evan's email that the NBA All-Star game was this weekend. Look, the NBA, before I get to this All-Star game, it really has become, for me, this time of year, pretty much dead. I mean, I just don't have much interest in it. Now, a big part of that is my team, my favorite team, our local team, the Wizards, are years away from being competitive. Even though they've actually played well recently, I saw and watched a little bit of last night's game. I watched a little bit of the game the other night against the Spurs. I don't know how much I will watch, you know, moving forward, but I wanted to see what some of the young guys like. By the way, just I'll add, FYI, I kind of like Kyshawn George, the third of their three first-round picks. I think he's got a lot of all-around ability. Defensively, he's got some talent. Alex Saar, by the way, was back last night. Here I am talking about a team and a league that I truly do not care about anymore this time of year. And I care about the NBA, I know, a lot more than some of you do. I love the NBA playoffs. Now, that's a product. That is an excellent product, start to finish. This regular season thing is for true diehards. And like the personalities at ESPN and at TNT who try to spice it up with provocative conversation, which isn't, you know, for a lot of people very provocative. They'd rather hear free agency NFL talk. The NFL's done this to everything in its wake. I mean, it's not just about the product being insufferable at times to watch. It's that we care so much about football and the NFL, and it's become such a year-round, you know, sport. You know, after the games end last weekend, we now have a free agency period that is less than a month away from starting. You know, in 5 days, the window for franchise tagging opens. You'll get big news that week. Not around here. The game itself, though, is bad right now. It's just hard to watch. Not necessarily for me because of all the three-pointers taken. That's a big issue for a lot of you. But for me, it's just the level of effort. You know, they just don't seem to try hard enough, consistently enough. The games in the regular season, I know they're not exhibitions, but at times watching them, they seem like exhibitions versus competitions. So the All-Star game last year, for the first time in about 6 or 7 years, went back to its old format, East versus West. I was actually kind of excited about that. I had had it with the, you know, keeping score by quarters and doing the drafts and the whole thing. I mean, I've become so much less interested in All-Star Weekend over the years anyway. But last year, if you recall, they went back and they just decided, okay, we've tried all these different formats and nothing really seems to work. Let's just go back to a good old East versus West and let's see if the guys will compete, if they'll actually turn this into more than just a carnival show, you know, a carnival act. And they had former players, remember, before the game last year, like Larry Bird, urging the players to take the game seriously. Bird's plea before the game to players, quote, "You got to compete," close quote. And nobody listened to him. Nobody listened to the commissioner. Nobody listened to anybody. Because last year's game was not a competition at all. The players just couldn't be bothered to try hard, to compete even a little bit. You know, even if you go back to All-Star games 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you know, they are partially exhibitions even back in the day. But when the game got to the point in which, you know, the score mattered to everybody, they competed. You know, this is not the Pro Bowl. It's not football. The Pro Bowl deteriorated and went away because players are not going to put themselves at risk of injury. You know, the NBA is different. Basketball's different. The NBA All-Star game at one point was really a showpiece of the regular season. And it was competitive. Last year's game was a complete joke. It was not a competition. It was not even really an exhibition that you would want to see. There were 168 three-point attempts in the game between the East versus West, and the East won the game 211 to 186. And remember, we talked about this, and actually, I found some of it after a while understanding that the players had quit on the idea. They could not be bothered to listen to anybody that urged them to turn it into something resembling a competition. But they started pulling up, remember, in the midst of a game. Not at the end of quarters. In the midst of the game, they started pulling up and taking half-court shots. Damian Lillard hit two of them, and that meant he was the MVP. That was what they were doing in the course of the game. It was literally 5-on-0 when the team with the ball, they had 5, the other team had 0 essentially, and you could do whatever you wanted to do. It was either a high-flying dunk or it was a pull-up 3, but typically from 40 feet or further out. Now, I don't know that what I'm going to explain to you is the last gasp. And then, like, if this doesn't work, they'll cancel it. Because I would imagine there's just too much money involved to just shoot it in the head, even though it deserves it at this point. But they're going to go with this format. And get this. The winner of the All-Star event that I'm going to explain here in a moment on Sunday, night, I guess it is, it's possible that the winning outfit may not include All-Star players. That's a twist. So here it is. Here's the new format. Thank you, Evan, for sending this to me. Sorry to you, Denton, that I don't remember you presenting this. Perhaps I was dialed in on, you know, an offensive line, defensive line matchup for the Thursday night game. It's going to be a mini tournament. It's an all-star format like we have not seen. This is not something they've tried. Three games, no clock, first team to 40 points wins, eight-man rosters, and I'll get to how these rosters are chosen. And again, there's actually a chance that the team leaving San Francisco, that's where the game is on Sunday, as winners, may have captured the All-Star crown without having a single All-Star on its roster. So there are four teams in this tournament. The three of the teams are picked by Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley from the pool of 24 All-Stars. All right, there are 12 from the East, 12 from the West. They will pick, draft three teams that will compete. The fourth team will be the team that wins the Rising Stars event on Friday night. The Rising Stars, remember, are not All-Stars. Some actually aren't even in the NBA right now, because in the Rising Stars event, there's a G League team in the event that will compete on Friday night. And the Rising Stars winner could potentially win this mini tournament, hence winning the All-Star game, meaning, yeah, guys who are currently not even in the league could win this thing. Maybe that's the secret here. To have guys that aren't in the league go after it really hard and maybe win the whole thing. Adam Silver said about this thing, well, we went back to the drawing board. The question, of course, is, will it work? It is kind of amazing, isn't it, that there's so little regard by so many players in the game, the All-Stars, the faces of the league right now, so little regard to some of the traditions of the game that they could not be bothered. They could not be hassled by anybody that urged them to show a little bit of professionalism last year and just compete a little bit. They just didn't. I mean, I don't know how to explain that. You know, they will look at what they're generating in revenue for these teams, what they're doing, putting their bodies on the line night in and night out, despite the fact that, you know, players certainly partake in load management, et cetera. You know, there were some players last year that were disappointed with the effort. SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, really wants players and has urged players to compete in this new format. But other players can't stand it. Kevin Durant's first response was, I hate it, absolutely hate it, it's terrible. And, you know, others, you know, think that the NBA's plan won't work. Anthony Davis, who, by the way, got hurt in his first game with the Mavericks last week, of course he did. And he's out for a while after the big trade. Anthony Davis, how predictable was that? That he would get hurt almost immediately. He said, I don't really like it. Of course, he's not going to be a part of it anyway because he's injured. But we'll see how it goes this year and see if they change it again or not. And certainly, if this doesn't work, they'll try something next year. But really, the easiest way for it to have worked is to pick all-star teams from the East and the West, have them play a basketball game, and tell the players to just try a little bit. Just compete a little bit. You know, try to just actually, you've got him, cover him. We're not asking you to go out and play defense like you would with 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of a game seven, but just try to keep the ball in front of you maybe for, you know, a half second or so. It's really kind of pitiful in a way.
It's hard to have sympathy for these guys complaining about the new format when they could have just played better in the old format.
Well, that's the thing, is that there just seems to be sometimes with, you know, it's not just NBA players, just professional athletes, the entitlement starting at a very young age and sort of getting their way and doing things the way they want. And if they don't like it, hey, we'll scrap that and we'll try something new. I mean, this game for a long, long period of time was played the way it was played last year. And of course, you had scores of 150 to 140. They weren't like, you know, actual regular season games. I'm not suggesting they were, but they weren't what we saw last year. You know, no one was coming down court, stopping at half court, and just firing a half court shot over and over again. That was really treating the game incredibly disrespectfully, no matter how entertaining some thought it was. And I love watching great shooters. And Damian Lillard, man, can really shoot it. And watching him pull up from half court, it was actually for a second or two kind of entertaining. But it's not in the spirit of what the league wanted last year. And the players, again, they just could not be bothered with making it work. And so we'll see whether or not it works this year. I will tell you personally, I have no interest in this at all. I mean, I don't know what's on Sunday. I'm sure there will be some college basketball that will be better to watch. I'm not a big Daytona 500 guy. That's on Sunday, correct? I believe it is. What's the golf this weekend? It's a Genesis, right? They moved it to Torrey Pines, right?
Well, you got Maryland on Sunday. Now, your college basketball schedule is before All-Star Sunday, which
yeah,
is on
it's
purpose.
Before. Yeah.
There are some good hoops games, though. Maryland-Iowa, Creighton at St. John's.
Maryland-Iowa on Sunday, I think, is actually at 5 o'clock, so it'll
That's
bleed right into the beginning.
Yeah, Michigan-Ohio State at 1. Bunch of good games.
Yeah. Okay. They should have gone Auburn-Alabama. They should have moved number 1 versus number 2 right up against the All-Star game, but it was an ESPN game, and the ESPN's a big NBA partner. They would never do that. Anyway.
We got the Genesis this weekend, though, so that'll be fun.
That's right. Yeah, I just said the Genesis. And it's remember, they moved it from Riviera because of the fires to Torrey Pines. I love watching tournaments at Riviera, don't get me wrong, but Torrey Pines is special, too. I'm pretty sure they moved it to Torrey Pines, right? Didn't they?
I believe so, yeah.
It's not being played at Riviera. Didn't they have major fire damage?
Yeah, it's at Torrey Pines in La Jolla.
Yeah, La Jolla, California. One of the most beautiful spots.
It's such a wonderful area.
It's spectacular. And it would be nice to be out there rather than where we are the last couple of days. it is going to warm up this weekend, but it's going to be rainy. It's going to be rain for the next few days. Then it gets bitter cold again next week with another storm or two. They could end up being, you know, adding to our snow totals for the year. We had winter this year. What do you mean we had it? We're having it. For the first time in a while, we're actually having winter. I get, every once in a while, I don't know about you, but you run into people who have just kind of moved to the area maybe. And they're like, yeah, this is, you know, they moved here maybe 2 or 3 years ago. This is great. You know, I lived in Atlanta. It's not that much different during the winter. And I'm like, yeah, but it can be. It can be, and this year, it has been. All right, there is someone who believes that Washington is a candidate for a major step-back season in 2025. I'll tell you who wrote that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I think we've had this guy on the show before. You told me that we've had him on the show, so I trust you on this. Jeff Kerr from CBSSports.com. He wrote a story that just came out earlier this morning for CBSSports.com titled Five Teams Poised to Take a Major Fall in 2025. The five teams are Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Denver, Indianapolis, and Washington. And he writes about Washington. Year one under Jaden Daniels was better than anything the Commanders anticipated. Washington won 12 games in Daniels' first season, including the only team to beat the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles since October began, then won consecutive playoff games on the road and reached the NFC title game. The Commanders are a conference title contender and have a franchise quarterback in Daniels, but it will be hard to replicate last season's success. They still have to play the Eagles twice and have the Lions on the schedule while playing five teams that won double-digit games on their road slate. Even if Daniels plays well, it's hard to win 12 games and go to the conference championship game. The Commanders may have a better roster in 2025 and have $75.2 million in cap space to make it better, but still may not replicate what they accomplished this season. So, look, the headline is more sort of, trying to get you to read the story, five teams poised to take a major fall in 2025. Vikings, Commanders appear primed for a drop-off. It is very possible that next year Washington is a better overall team and wins fewer games. I'm not for those of you that have listened over the years, I'm not a big guy, a big schedule guy in terms of being convinced that the schedule that you have laid out in front of you before a season starts is going to be what you think it is. Like, if you go to 2025 opponents right now, schedule strength, and you base it off, the only thing you can base it off right now, which I think is the worst thing to do, which is 2024 records, Washington would have the eighth toughest schedule in the NFL next year. And yes, five teams that had double-digit wins last year. And not just double-digit wins. They play the Chiefs on the road, they won 15. They play the Eagles on the road, they won 14. They play the Packers on the road, they won 11. They play the Chargers on the road, they won 11. They play the Vikings on the road, they won 14 games. They also play Atlanta on the road, who won 8 games, but was in the hunt for a playoff berth. And they play Miami on the road, who won 8 games. That game, we're thinking, might be, who knows, in Madrid. That's a lot. By the way, think about that. 15, 14, 14, 11, and 11. That is the 5 road games where the teams last year, the Chiefs won 15, the Vikings and Eagles both won 14, the Packers and the Chargers both won 11 games. And then at home, they've got a Denver team that won 10 and a Detroit team who won 15 at home. And then, of course, the Eagles as well, who won 14, and the Seahawks, who won 10 games. So, you know, the reason I'm not a big fan of the schedule is teams change and teams, you know, sometimes are vastly different one year to the next. And that's why Washington could be vastly different, but as we've talked about many times, the thing that typically keeps the consistency year to year with a team's results when they are good results is the quarterback. If you have the guy, you have a much better chance if he plays in the majority or all of the games to continue to be a good team. But, you know, it's certainly possible. You look at their schedule. Let's just say Kansas City is really good again. Philadelphia is really good again. The Packers are good. The Chargers are good. The Lions are good. There's no reason to look at these teams right now and think those teams are going to be major drop-off teams. The one that you would look at and say they've got a chance for a major drop-off is Minnesota. They won 14 games, and they may have a guy starting a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy next year who's never taken an NFL snap. But it's also possible that there are teams that are improved. Maybe Pete Carroll's Raiders are an improved team. Maybe the Bears are improved with Ben Johnson. You know, you just never know. I mean, sometimes the games that look like wins end up being the toughest games when you get there. It's not who you play, it's when you play them, typically year in and year out. But it's possible that Washington takes a 2-game step back and wins 10, but maybe is a better overall team. Because, again, there's no way to look at the season that our team just had and not say that they really had one of those ball bounces their way seasons. It just did, consistently, over and over again. They made their own luck. You know, the harder they worked, the luckier they got. And the more talented a quarterback, the luckier they seemed to get. But we know the games that could have easily gone the other way, and none of them did, with the exception of the Pittsburgh game, really. That's the only game they played this year in which they were good enough to win the game, and they lost it, and they probably lost it by an inch, or maybe less than an inch on the Ertz catch, which in the moment, I thought was a first down and would have put them in striking range of a walk-off field goal attempt. And, you know, the Dallas game, obviously they missed an extra point, but they didn't deserve to win the Dallas game. They didn't play well enough to win the Dallas game at home. But many of their wins clearly could have gone the other way. You know, sometimes you get those seasons where it's like, hey, man, you won a lot of games that you were lucky to win. Yeah, but they lost a lot of games that they were unlucky to lose. This season was really about a lot of games that went their way, especially at the end, And their losses, you can only point to one and say they earned the right to win that game, and they were within an inch or less than an inch on the throw to Ertz against the Steelers to having a chance to win that game. But I think we'll see some of those stories. You know, you get it every year. You know, which playoff teams from 2024 won't make the playoffs in 2025? Which double-digit win teams, you know, will take a major step back? You're going to see more of those. And I'm telling you, the basis for the thought on Washington will be the schedule more than anything else. When people discuss Washington's 2025 upcoming season and they predict some sort of drop-off, it's going to be based on, you know, what appears to be a very difficult schedule. But those things change, and those things don't always look like, by the time you get there, what they looked like before the season began. But, you know, trips to Lambeau, the Link, Arrowhead, Minnesota, you know, those are tough, tough places to go in and win, even when the teams aren't excellent. And those teams right now on paper will come back as projected playoff teams for sure. The Eagles will, the Packers will, the Chiefs will, the Chargers will. I don't know about the Vikings. That's a very difficult building to play in. I don't know what the preseason expectations for the Vikings will be. You know, and the Atlanta Falcons have a good roster. Will Penix Jr., in his first full year of starting, be a guy that, you know, elevates everything around him, or at least makes everything around him work? Because they're talented. The Falcons are talented. I don't know about the Dolphins. At home, though, you know, having the Broncos, the Bears, and the Lions, and the Seahawks outside of your division opponents, I mean, is there a game right now based on what we think of these teams that you'd look at and you'd say, yeah, that's a win? The Giants twice, the Cowboys certainly, you know, you would. You only got one last year and you were lucky to get one, but you figure you're going to win. And I guess the Raiders at home and maybe the Bears at home, but who knows? Different deal next year. It'll be exciting, though. I mean, there's going to be some big-time matchups. But as long as Five's healthy and he's out there, I don't see personally any, you know, way the team, with what we hope they'll do to upgrade the roster, I don't see any way, as long as he's upright for 17 games, that they lose more games than they win. I see, as long as he's playing quarterback for us moving forward, year in and year out, the playoffs are very much the conversation starter. And then it's about whether or not you're good enough to do something when you get there. And that usually evolves, that conversation, during the course of the season. Yeah, the toughest schedules, by the way, based on I think, and Denton and I have talked about this the last couple of years, and it's the best way to determine strength of schedule before a season starts, and even that is somewhat flawed. But it's based on the over-unders in Vegas, the sportsbook over-unders. It's not based on what teams did last year. But based on what teams did last year, the NFC East has the toughest schedules. The Giants have the toughest, Philadelphia the fourth toughest, Dallas the fifth, and Washington the eighth toughest in the league. They play the NFC North, and they play the AFC West. So, there you go. Eric Edholm from NFL.com next. Eric Edholm has been a writer for a long time, covering the NFL, NFL.com, at Eric underscore Edholm on X on Twitter. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. I was just looking through your X account, and you retweeted yesterday at some point this. This guy that posts all these old NFL games, follow that too, and I end up going down deep holes and deep dives. But it's very funny because yesterday you were watching a 1990 game in which Warren Moon threw for 527 yards in a 27-10 win against the Chiefs at Arrowhead, and you tweeted years ago, I watched this entire game. He could have had 650 yards had it not been for two big drops, one bad out of bounds call, and two bad flags. First of all, I'm just curious, did you grow up an Oilers fan?
No, not at all. No, my dad kind of did. He lived in Houston in the 60s, so he sort of came up with the team or whatever, but like not in a huge way or whatever. And it must have been the pandemic year. We were like, all right, we got to find some stories to write about. You know, we need stuff to. So I had always written about the 500 yard games. That's kind of a story I follow. Like there's been 27 of them in the NFL history or whatever. It's crazy to me that nobody's top Van Brocklin from
51 or whatever. Yeah,
right. So that game in particular stood out, and I called Bill Cowher and I called Warren Moon and asked him to walk me through the game. And Bill Cowher said, like, he thinks that may have been the greatest quarterback game that he's ever been a part of. So I found some dude in like Cincinnati, got a copy of the DVD of the game, watched the whole thing, and it was incredible. Like, you forget how good those corners were for the Chiefs and Derek Thomas and all that. And for Moon to do it against that defense and have like five or six plays really go against them, that, you know, it was an incredible game watching it years later.
So it was interesting because yesterday I stumbled upon something that I had not seen in a long time. And it was from the exact same season a month earlier, November 1990. Washington played a game at Detroit, Eric. It's their biggest comeback in franchise history. They were down 21 in the third quarter at Detroit. And they came back and won the game 41-38 in overtime with Jeff Rutledge replacing Stan Humphries at quarterback. But here's the thing about the game. Listen to this. And I remembered that it was an offensive show like you read about. They had 676 total yards in the game. It's the fourth most in NFL history. Wow. I did not remember that about the game. I went back and looked it up. Actually, the most yards ever by a team in a game was that game last year, not this past season, but in 2023 when Miami beat Denver 70-20. They had 726 yards in the game. That set the NFL record for most yards in the game. But what's amazing about this game, Washington had 676 yards in the game, almost all of it coming in three quarters of the game, and they had four turnovers in the game.
Yeah, and barely won. Yeah,
But here's one more piece of it. Time of possession in the game. Washington, 49 minutes, 52 seconds. Detroit, 19 minutes and 18 seconds.
That's hard to do. That is really hard to do. Oh, my gosh. There are some gems out there. Like, I understand, you know, some of us get caught up in the weeds too much and go down rabbit holes and start looking through old YouTube games and, you know, Pro Football Reference. I swear, I think I keep that site alive myself. You
right,
know, but,
me too.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Like, just digging through some of the record books and, you know, finding out these weird, obscure statistical abnormalities and stuff. It's fun work. It's good for May and June. It's usually not good when I'm in the middle of draft season, though. So
yeah, I know. Free agency draft season is busy, but I end up far too often just wasting probably, I don't know if it's valuable time or not, watching so many of these games on YouTube. Look, for so many years here until this season, you'll understand this. That's all we had was some of these games on YouTube to go back and watch. But
I mean,
they're
live
fun,
here in
you
Chicago,
know.
And this is what Bears fans do. Believe me, this isn't, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree here. Like, this is, there are Bears fans who watch, like, you know, Jeff Graham highlights from 1998 and stuff and revel in that. So, you know, it's the same idea.
You know, in picking up on Warren Moon, there was something I watched, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and it's truly one of the more electric atmosphere NFL games of all time. And the reason Warren Moon reminds me of it is because, to me, Dan Marino and Warren Moon are, well, Dan Marino is number one in terms of quarterbacks on my list of quarterbacks never to have won a Super Bowl, but Moon is really high on the list. But the game in which Marino torched the 85 Bears on Monday Night Football, when the Bears were undefeated, they were threatening the 72 Dolphins. This is a late season game, December, in the Orange Bowl. That game exists on YouTube. If anybody wants to see one of the great atmospheres and one of the great performances against, I think, the greatest defense of all time, Marino was unbelievable that night. Unbelievable.
And to think, and just to give historical context of it, right? I mean, they were undefeated heading into the game. It was a big deal, popping the champagne. That kind of started the whole thing about the 72 Dolphins teams that would celebrate every time the last unbeaten fell during a season and all that. And to think that the Bears came back from that game. They returned to Chicago, and on Tuesday, their day off, they recorded the Super Bowl Shuffle. They got absolutely smashed on Monday night.
Is that when they recorded it?
What's that?
That's when they recorded it, after they got their ass kicked in the Orange Bowl?
Unless I'm completely misremembering, I believe that's – I'll have to double-check after we stop. But, like, I'm almost positive they came back from that game and said, oh, yeah, we're definitely still going to the Super Bowl. And guess what? They did it. I mean, that's the incredible part. They went down to Park West, recorded the thing, and, you know, like, fresh after licking their battle wounds, you know, because you're right. Marino absolutely smashed them. A couple lucky bounces that night, but what, you know,
you're right.
A classic regular season game, yeah.
That's a great memory, and I had forgotten it. There's a touchdown pass to Clayton where the ball's tipped at the line of scrimmage. It goes up in the air. You know, the Bears converge on it, miss it, overrun it. It lands in the hands of Clayton. He turns around and runs like 50 yards for a touchdown. Yeah. But, you know, the other thing about that game is it was not Jim McMahon who started the game. It was Steve Fuller.
And Fuller somehow had put up 44 on Dallas that year. I mean, if the Bears felt invincible that year, you can understand why. Their backups were killing people too. But, yeah, that was the one time they didn't get it done.
Yeah, I mean, do you agree with me Marino's the greatest quarterback not to win a Super Bowl?
I'd have to sort of look at the list again, but yeah, like that. I mean, I grew up in that era. You know, I grew up in New England, so I would watch him twice a year, you know, destroy the Patriots. And, you know, it just felt like, boy, if they could ever get a run game, if they could ever have a defense that was up to par, you know, this would be the most unstoppable team. And he never got sacked either. That's the other thing about Marino. I mean,
such a quick release.
He would just throw these dimes and do it on three-step drops. Like, how do you stop that? You know, you have to have 6'8" linemen just to block the ball or something like that, and even they can't do it. So he really was special, and I do worry that a generation from now, people won't remember just how good he was.
Yeah, I think, like, I just pulled up a list as you were talking, because I mean, to me, Moon came to mind. Jim Kelly came to mind. Fran Tarkington's on the list. Of course, he got to three of them with Minnesota and lost. Philip Rivers is on the list. Moon's on the list. But Dan Fouts is on the list. Fouts was a great quarterback. And they actually had an AFC championship game at home one year and lost it on the road in the, you know, in that ice bowl at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So he had a chance. But so, you know, it's actually not a bad segue in talking about the 85 Bears, or at least mentioning them. If you've watched a lot of NFL football, I tried to put it in the context of my, you know, watching years and years of NFL football, but I thought Sunday was one of the most dominant defensive performances I've ever witnessed in a game like that. Where would you put it?
Yeah, if you consider the opponent and you consider what was at stake for the Chiefs especially, right? I mean, I think that matters. Obviously, I think there were some people who felt the Chiefs were a team of destiny for various reasons, and obviously have the quarterback of this generation. And, you know, some people feel like Mahomes one day could maybe be the greatest of all time. All I know, that debate has taken a little bit of a left turn lately. But still, yeah, I think you put that into context, you realize they don't score until the very end of the third quarter. You know, and I mean, how many Hall of Famers are there on the Chiefs right now? Certainly two. Hopkins might be a third. You know, I mean, I'm sure Joe Tooney will be a candidate at some point. I know he didn't play well Sunday night, but still, I mean, you know, there's some dudes on that offense, and for what, to a man, what the Eagles did, I don't think a single player on that side of the ball played poorly. I mean, you could say they gave up some yards there at the end, but I'm with you. I don't know that it quite matches the four-quarter dominance of what the Bears did against the Patriots, but Patriots didn't have as good an offensive team as what Kansas City obviously does.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Eason and Craig James and, you know, I mean, you didn't mention, I mean, it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes,
yeah,
and they
right.
didn't cross midfield on their first nine drives of yep. the game. I think that's what best describes what happened, because if you look at the numbers at the end of the game, it's the all-time garbage yard stat stuffing quarters, you know, the fourth quarter with the Chiefs. I mean, and the Eagles took their foot off the pedal, they put subs in, but the first three quarters of that game was I thought Seattle, what they did to Peyton Manning's, you know, highest scoring yeah. team ever in Denver was pretty impressive too.
That one, yeah. In fact, it's funny. We were actually talking about that on the podcast the other day. That game gets kind of forgotten a little bit. You know, somebody had asked them something about, you know, Super Bowls that were sort of quickly washed out of our mind in terms of what happened during the game, like the actual, you know, I felt like we didn't break down a ton of the game on Monday, and for good reason, right? It was 34-0, and, you know, the game was obviously out of hand, and, you know, we might have highlighted a few plays, the Jean's interception or this or that, but, yeah, it's Seattle reminded me of that. Obviously, Peyton's legacy was sort of hanging a little bit in the balance where he did an all-time, but yeah, those two performances in terms of recent football, you know, again, that Denver offense was on that kind of level too. So I think that's the best comparison we can come up with.
We're talking to Eric at home from NFL.com. You said something, you know, in describing the Chiefs about Patrick Mahomes, you know, the greatest of all time, but maybe that rep took a hit Sunday night. Did it? Do you think? I mean, maybe in the moment, but do you think when we kind of step back from this, we're going to think a lot differently about Patrick Mahomes?
I would hope we do. I mean, I you're right. We are all prisoners of the moment, and like watching him struggle in that game, it kind of almost sort of it kicked over the Tampa Bay game, you know, and that performance. You know, I know that
he played much better in that game, though.
Yeah, exactly. The numbers looked worse, of course. You know, just look at him, you say, oh, he didn't play well in that game. But if you remember, like, he had the diving throw that should have been a touchdown. You know, all those different plays where you just said, wow, he is not going to win this game tonight, right? But Sunday night was different. He looked spooked early. He never really found his groove until it was too late. So, but yeah, one game should never define any player's career, right? And I think as more time passes and he continues to win in his career, Pat's not going anywhere. I'm sorry. Like, I don't, you know, he may go through a lull at some point like Brady did, where they would win games but lose in the divisional round or lose in the wild card. That could happen, right? We're not saying that the Chiefs are this impenetrable force or anything like that, but I would hope that the body of his work speaks for itself and that we do kind of remember the incredible comebacks and the performances below the Super Bowl too that got him there. You know, he has a chance to at least match Brady's brilliance all time. He does, you know, and
yeah.
I hope we kind of keep that in mind. I'm sure we will.
What do we say about the opposing quarterback and the MVP of the Super Bowl, Jalen Hurts?
That's a great question. Obviously his career was never going to be, I don't know. I mean, he entered the NFL with question marks. So did Pat, for that matter, I guess. But it was different, right? He had to overcome some stuff early in his career. And, you know, I think losing the Super Bowl 2 years ago and then last season, the strain that seemed to be the dark cloud that kind of followed Jalen around, that followed Nick Sirianni around, that doomed this team in December, I think it carried over in the beginning of the year. You know, they were 2-2. They were playing okay football, but not great football. And they had to have a kind of an awakening. And I felt like Jalen's play after that point, everyone points to the fact that it's, you know, his numbers aren't as robust. They don't ask him to do as much. But, man, he played so efficiently. I mean, even with the sacks, you'd have to say from, like, week six on, from that bye week on, they were a completely different football team, and he was a different football player. And, you know, the first one has a way of kind of sheltering a player or cleansing a guy's, you know, whatever we perceive to be his limitations before that. The second one could almost add a layer of, you know, impenetrability about you or whatever. But, you know, I think that was a big one for both him and Nick and for Vic Fangio, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the very least, we have to acknowledge that this guy, in every big game he's played in his career, he has played his best football of his career. I mean, he's the definition right now in the league of a clutch quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think he played super against the Rams, but he made enough big plays in that game to get, obviously, you know, you're allowed a little bit of, you know, some games where things aren't perfect. But I think you're right. I mean, I never feel like you say that Jalen Hurts didn't show up. You know, there may be games during the season where, you know, like early in the year when the fumbles were a little bit of a problem, you know, he threw some picks early in the year. You know, there kind of was this question of, is he getting Kellen Moore's offense? Is he figuring this thing out? And he did. And they ended up being a really nice pair. But, you know, he and Baker Mayfield, a handful of guys, you know, I think Geno Smith maybe early in his career too, like when you just have these new coordinators every year too, that adds a layer of difficulty to the whole operation. So yeah. Sometimes we sell short his mental capacities, not just as a decipherer of defenses, but also, you know, as a very quiet, stoic leader for that team that's been exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, I watched, you know, one of those mic'd up shows last night, and there's sometimes we can kind of overstate the importance of these things, but the touchdown pass to Devontae Smith, to listen to every single offensive lineman basically come up to him and just say, you know, you're proving everybody wrong, you're the guy. Yep. There just seems to be a lot of respect in the locker room for that guy. I'm projecting here based on watching last night, but no. I think we've heard that before, right?
Oh, and I mean, I will just say, like, I remember talking at the combine, but when he was coming out, to Alabama players who said they watched his, you know, his body language to being benched at halftime for Tua Tagovailoa in the national championship game, and then sticking around an extra year or two, and like the respect they had for him doing that and being a part of a thing that could have been, no one would have made a single excuse for him bailing right now, especially in this era, you know. And it was, I just remember that the measure of respect that the Bama players talked about Jalen Hurts with when he was coming out, it just felt different, you know. I thought of that too, because I saw some of those mic'd up clips too where they talked about Hurts, and I said, you know, not everybody loves this guy, but the guys who go to battle with him seem to just, yeah, you know, they'll follow him wherever he goes, and they'll be right behind him whenever the battle is starting.
Yeah, I think about when he came in for Tua in that SEC championship game, just the reaction to the way he played was incredible. All right, let's talk about our team. You put out your first all-too-early power rankings for the 2025 season. You've got Washington at 6, so, I mean, obviously, what an unbelievable, unexpected, thrilling season for our team here. What do you expect next year?
Yeah, and just to be fair, that is, you know, there's a little, it's a little vague. It's capping last season, and then maybe a tiny bit.
They're telling
you
have to do this.
Yeah, no, well, I have to put it in the right context, because people were a little confused. Is this looking forward? Is this next year's? I would have had the 49ers higher if it was a preseason list. This was the final chapter.
Okay, my fault.
Yeah, no, it's okay, and I just, like, I probably should have made that more clear in the intro, but you know, I didn't include them in the final four because I still think there's a lot to do. And again, I'm not pouring cold water on what they accomplished this season. Nothing short of incredible. And that, all the flowers to, you know, Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, Jaden Daniels, you know, Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvo down the line. they outperformed by a healthy measure. When I start looking at the things they still need to accomplish, it's a fairly substantial list. But the good news is I think they can cross off a lot of boxes this offseason. They have the cap space. I think they'll do well again in the draft. They have some, you know, second and third year guys who can still contribute and add to this team. So hard not to be thrilled and excited with the future and can think that this thing can continue. I guess the Texans are a good sort of comp as far as knowing maybe they're not going to take that gigantic leap forward, but, you know, it sort of serves as a little bit of a reminder that they can't just, you know, I mean, that it's not assumed that you're going to win more games the next year.
Yeah, I mean, that box, you know, the boxes are plentiful that need to be checked in the offseason. I wonder if, like, we look at them with more urgency because Philadelphia is in the division.
Yeah, and you're on the rookie contract with Daniels. Those two factors,
well, yeah,
right? And, I mean, when you combine those things, there's no reason for them not to smash the gas pedal this offseason and try to go for it. That doesn't mean you abandon, you know, your kind of rules in free agency and how much you're willing to spend, and you got to be disciplined. I think Adam showed a strong measure of that last offseason with who they signed. You know, maybe the belt's a little loosened now because of what we saw this year and because of the fact that you have a Super Bowl caliber team, probably the team that will start number one on most people's power rankings next year in the division. So I guess it's, you know, two of the three matchups, I think they held up pretty well, and that's a good sign. But again, lots to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, when you describe it as a smash the gas pedal season, I've called this is window number one. I mean, we haven't had a window here to discuss in three-plus decades, but this is a swing big off season because of the rookie contract and an elite quarterback at that. So let's start with, real quickly, Myles Garrett. What do you think the chances are that Washington lands him?
What, I mean, what if Philly lands him? Like, I know
I people
that are laughing, ha, 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 but yeah, seriously, like, that alone.
I've talked about it.
Yeah,
that'd be
bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other factor being in the division with Howie Roseman, is that you have to sort of be watching him, and you have to be asking yourself, what trade is he going to pull off? What surprise free agent signing? I mean, they're always thinking kind of two, three steps ahead. They're not satisfied with one ring. So, you know, that and the positional need. Now, I understand, you know, why they moved on from their previous two defensive ends. But again, the calculus and the map has changed. So I would consider it. I absolutely would. I think, you know, if you have a player of that caliber, you saw what Dan Quinn did with Micah Parsons. It would be different, but you saw what he did with an explosive, attention-grabbing, game-changing defensive player. They have a lot of good parts on that side of the ball, but they need something to kind of bring it all together. And I think, you know, depending on the price, I would have to think long and hard about that.
Last one. I appreciate the time I could do this with
sure.
you forever, but where do you, you know, forget your power rankings because it's a lot off of this past season, but as you look forward to next year, and Washington's got a ton of cap space, they have a ton of flexibility, and by the way, I would say, Eric, they are much more of a destination for players than they have ever been
100%.
Before. This was a place, you know, players avoided. Now they may embrace Washington as a place to sign. So Philadelphia is, you know, obviously right now the defending champions. List in order the biggest threats in the NFC to Philadelphia.
I mean, it's still got to be Detroit. I know they lost both coordinators. I know we saw what happened to another team that had that happen, the Eagles, last year. But still, Dan Campbell's had to be thinking about this last year. So I think he's had in mind some coaches that would fill those spots. So I think they have to be on that list. You know, I think you would nominally say the Packers and Vikings are somewhere, depending on what they do this offseason, kind of lurking. They're not there yet, but they could get there, you know. So you throw the Commanders in that mix. You know, out west, it's kind of hard to say, but I would imagine that the 49ers are back in some form or fashion. You know, again, I had them number two in my power rankings end of the year. It feels ludicrous now, but, you know, sometimes teams just have a bad year. Look at 2020. You know, that was a bad year for the 49ers. They came right back the next year and were dominant the next couple seasons. So I don't think we can overlook them. I'd put the Rams on hold for now. We don't know what's going on with Stafford. That's a tricky situation, but those are the big ones, I would say.
Yeah, the Stafford situation, I can't imagine, honestly, that he's not playing in L.A. for McVay next year. But apparently there's a chance it doesn't happen.
I just keep, I'm with you. That was my initial thinking. And I thought, yeah, in the end, they'll figure it out. We heard Sean was going to retire and Aaron Donald was going to retire after the Super Bowl. We've heard some kind of wild rumors out of L.A. the last few years. Hey, it's not happening. But, they tried to trade Cooper Kupp at the deadline last year. That didn't get a lot of attention, but they did.
Right.
And now they're moving him. So I feel like some of these rumors that come out of L.A. are actually grounded in some kind of truth. We'll see. There might be some quarterback movement that we're not anticipating this offseason.
Eric Edholm, NFL.com, at Eric_Edholm. I always love having you on the show. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Hope you're well. Let's do it again soon.
Always enjoy jumping on. Thanks, Kevin. See ya.
Yep. Eric Edholm, everybody. We'll do some Denton news next.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.